Consumer saying the mission that it's forbidden. The Shabbat is kosher. Why should it be forbidden to take the egg? The Consumer saying you're not allowed to eat the egg. The Gemara can't understand. The Maya Shema, what's the matter? Why are you not permitted to eat the egg? The Gemara gave four different reasons. Can we discuss a little bit the first reason of the Gemara that is talking about the time of day, the same measures, the Gabriel basin. So the hen itself is not called oikal. The hen itself is like a shoe. And when the egg comes out, that's considered a situation of no love bomb. I have a machine, part of the machine converted to become food. That's considered a form of no love bomb, something that wasn't in the state of food at all, I have nothing. And that's a dispute between Beisham and Bisul, whether you hold for mukta or not. If you hold for mukta, and you're not allowed to eat it, you don't hold for mukta, you're not allowed to eat it. The Gemara says the other Amoraim would not accept the view of the first Mandama, who was that, the Rav Nachman. The other Amoraim disagreed with Rav Nachman because they feel that even Mandama, Islay Mukta, Islay Noila, this is Noila Tomo. The dispute between the Shem and Rav Yudin, and Beisham and Bisul, and the Rashabin, whether the Hofa Mukta or not means, but you have to have Hakonas are violent to the Ochman and the Kerim, or I say that all Ochman and the Kerim are Mukha Miralayim. But you have something that changes those rituals in the middle of Shabbos, like the Baruch Hashem calls the month to fall down in the middle of Shabbos. In the beginning of Shabbos it didn't exist at all in the form of food. Or let's say a guy will take boards of wood and will make a table out of it in the middle of Shabbos. And everybody would agree that that's good too. It came into existence as a kli, or as ochel, in the middle of Shabbos, and you can't say that it was mitzvah ne'eva from before you. So that's why the other Amoraim don't accept the view of Rav Nachman. Then we had the second, so we have to go on to another interpretation. Then we had the second interpretation was Rabbi. Rabbi says, no, we're talking about Talmud Gadol from Medrash, Latino, talking about a hen that the Balabot plans to eat is not shechted. Today, tomorrow, we do a Yom Tov. And so within a few days, he plans to shech that. So the hen is considered oichel. And the base that comes out should also be oichel. So if oichel comes from oichel, so that can't be considered the mukhtar. That's not normal. It's like if uchel is oichel. It's like if you take a big loaf of bread, it's like a piece of challah in the middle. So that's not called normal. That's as well as a loaf, and now it's right. That's not considered a common foundation for the time. It's not an issue of mukta at all. It's a completely different issue. The rabbi explains what's the issue. It's a din of hakona. What's a din of hakona? It explains to set the table on Yom Tov from a story Yom Tov, but to set the table on Shabbos from a story Shabbos if you get dressed for a party or whatever. To set the table on Shabbos for the Kriyas HaTorah from Monday or something like that. That's only to deal with the rabbona. To prepare from Yom Tov to Chol, or from Shabbos to Chol, that's only up to the Rabbanan. But to prepare from Yom Tov to Shabbos, or Shabbos to Yom Tov, that's a big mina teira. We would have said, it doesn't make any sense. But no, that's our question. That's the din of our Chol Adilam. That's the first step. That's the Rabbi doesn't appear in our Gemara. That's in the Gemara in Erevin. That Rabbi, the din of our Chol has two parts. Number one, it's forbidden to prepare on Yom Tov for Shabbos. On Shabbos to Yom, we're not talking about being malach. We're not talking about cooking food on Yom Tov to Shabbos. No malach at all. Just set the table on Yom Tov for Shabbos. And Rabbi says that's the bidding on Shabbos. Do an act of hachana. Those who do an act of hachana on Shabbos to Chol or Yom Tov to Chol is only welcome to Rabbanan. But on Yom Tov to Shabbos, Shabbos to Yom Tov, that's also nothing. And number two, that the Rav Gemara is discussing, if you have some food or some kli that you want to use, when you have Yom Tov next to Shabbos, the Shabbos next to Yom Tov, you want to use it on the second day, and it was Hukhan yesterday, for today, then it's awesome in our favorite to use that food, or to use the kli on the second day. So Rabbah claims that that's what's going on in the Mishnah. If you have a Yom Tov next to a Shabbos, or a Shabbos next to Yom Tov, the Yom Tov falls out either on Friday or on Sunday. It will be forbidden in our Torah to eat the dates on that is born on the second day, that the hen lays on the second day before, since the hens lay eggs every other day, so we assume that the egg that's laid on the second day was Yigmaro, the dates was Yigmaro on the first day. And even though the hen didn't violate an Aver, the hen is not Jewish, and the Abarishon didn't violate an Aver, and I certainly didn't do anything. What was my fault that the hen prepared the egg? Nobody did any Aver over here, it doesn't matter, Rabbi says. It's a prohibition, there's one prohibition to do an act of hachana, but that's we're not talking about anybody violating the act of what the chicken violated hachana, doesn't matter. And then there's another din unrelated to that violation. even if the one who made the hakana is an animal. It's a natural process that the hakana occurs. It's forbidden to eat on the second day the food that was ruchan on the first day. And he said, right. That the only time it constitutes an improper hakana is if with the dog the hen really laid the egg. And I said that the Gemara was yesterday for that egg that the hen laid today. But if the hen never lays the egg, it just stays inside the body. When you check the hen and you find the egg inside, that's not saying. It's not looked at. Sometimes it's forbidden to eat the egg because it had an improper hakana. And maybe if you have food that you're not allowed to eat, and maybe if it comes from if you have the behavior to eat the food on Yom Kippur, but usually Yom Kippur, we discuss this, is if you have raw potatoes in the refrigerator. If it's Yom Kippur and you're allowed to cook raw potatoes, but the raw potatoes are not mukta. If it's Shabbos, and normally you don't eat raw potatoes, so then it says the Shulchan Aruch based on a Rashbor, and we're going to quote in the name of the Rashbor, that the raw potatoes are mukta mamish, and you're not even allowed to move it or move it off the coma. You didn't want to rearrange all the parts in the refrigerator to begin to move it. What you can do is, if the raw potatoes are in the way, you can put a pot in and push the potatoes like this. That's called put the muktam in outside, and it's called the muktam because it's in the way. You can do that, but you can't pick up the potatoes the other time and move it. Why is it muktam? The potatoes are Michael Behemoth. So the answer is yes, Michael Behemoth is meant to feed it to the behemoth. Whatever is Michael Behemoth is not muktam. But if I have raw potatoes, which I don't plan to feed to my behemoth, in Europe I had a farm, so you can feed it to the behemoth, raw potatoes. But if you live in a house, you don't live on a farm, so you're not going to feed the raw potatoes to your dog or to your cat. You plan to cook those potatoes and eat them yourself. And on Shabbos, you're forbidden to cook the raw potatoes. On Shabbos, you're not considered a local at all, so you can eat over here. If you have the baked, the hen lays an egg on Yom Kippur. If you plan to feed the egg to the behemoth, if it's in the egg, then it's not mukta. And the egg is not mukta. There's no barrier to feed the eggs to the behemoth. But if you're interested in eating the egg, usually you don't give raw eggs to the dogs and the cats. People do. Let's say it's Yom Kippur. Let's say it's Yom Kippur and you can cook it. Let's say Yom Kippur is on Sunday and the egg is laid, the hen lays the egg on Sunday and it's Yigmar on Shabbos. If you plan to feed the egg to a behemoth, it's an egg, not mukta. There's no violation. But if you want to eat the egg yourself, so you're not permitted to eat that egg because it had an improper hakana on it. And then the neighbor, once you have an egg that you can't do anything with, the neighbor becomes mukta. Why is it mukta that you can feed it to the animal? You don't plan to feed it to the animal, like the raw potatoes on Shabbos. You don't plan to feed it to the animal. You plan to wait to have the yacht. But you're not allowed to, because they had an improper hakana. Yeah. The din of hakana only applies as far as food to other. A Jewish person has to eat food on Yom Kippur, even as strictly speaking, the mitzvah of students is probably only for the Rabbana, but whatever food he eats on Shabbat and Yom Kippur, it's a mitzvah. It's a kiyama mitzvah, even if it's not mukhlis to have a student in a terror, whatever he eats constitutes a kiyama mitzvah by the Yom Kippur. So you're only permitted to eat on Yom Kippur food that had a proper hakana, that had an improper hakana, it's also a kiyama mitzvah. The behemoth doesn't have any mitzvah, as far as the behemoth is concerned, it's not Yom Kippur. Rashi takes our kasha here. Rashi says both say the same kasha in the same place. Definitely not allowed to eat an egg that was nigmar on Shabbos. You're not allowed to eat it on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, the Shabbos next to each other. Not allowed to eat the egg that was laid by the hen on the second day. That was prepared by the inside of the hen on the third day. So how can you ever eat any eggs that are born on Sunday, that are born on the day Yom Kippur? Why not say it's only Hukhan on Yom Kippur, Hukhan on Shabbos? The Rashi intelligence says that's not a kasha. Do not call the food that you eat on the weekday doesn't eat any hakana. There's no mitzvah to eat food at all. You have to eat in order to survive, but it's not considered a kima mitzvah to eat food on the weekday. So it doesn't bother me if I have an improper hakana from Shabbos to the weekday, Yom Kippur to the weekday. It doesn't count at all. So, including Shabbos to the Yom Kippur requires hakana, say it's far as the Jew is concerned, if the Jew is eating it, if a goy eats it, give them to him. I can let a goy eat the egg. I can let the bay eat the egg also. But if I don't plan to give it to a goy, I don't plan to give it to the bay. I plan to eat the egg myself. And I know because I can't eat it. So I'm going to wait till after Yom Kippur in order to eat it. But that's why it looks good, because I have an egg that I just absolutely can't use today.
So according to Hafiz, the egg is more than the come down on Shabbos without you.
So that's in my kasha. Shabbos Yomot is to be a plain old Shabbos should be mutter, and a plain old Yomot should be mutter because it was completed on Erev Shabbos. So the Mishnah doesn't seem to say like that. The Mishnah talks about a Beis Hashanah of the Yomot. It doesn't say it's a Beis Hashanah of the Yomot that is on the Toy Shabbos, and Shabbos that's on the Toy Yomot. So the Gemara says you're right. Rather holds that the Ikir is their right only applies when you have Shabbos and Yom Tov with him there or there. But if you have a Yom Tov, the Alma, plain Yom Tov, or plain Shabbos, not next to Shabbos or Yom Tov, then it's only ultimate of Abba. And on the basis, you know, the Zeru and Mishum are Shabbos next to Yom Tov. That's how Rabbi interprets the reason for the mission. Rabbi's Shabbos.
The
Baha'i Torah,
assuming
that
it's
other Baha'i. Rabbi thinks that it's there. Does anybody call that Rabbi said that this is the Baha'i Torah? The Gemara says on the next step, according to Rabbi, it's a Yisra Derech. Right, you quote your father. You could have said the father is in Aslach. But the Gemara says explicitly enough, you're going to go into that at once. The Gemara says on the next
step.
To then attract, to make it clear, otherwise if it's only a Yisra de Rabbanon, and Shabbos is next to Yom Tov, so it will be a day which is there. So the Gemara says that Rabbi's in it, so there is a Yisra de Rabbanon. The other Rabbanon writing, don't hold the Rabbi. There is no Din, not the Nasser, not the Rabbanon, not one of the Rabbi. That's what the Gemara says on the next step. There are four different reasons for the mission. So the Gemara says, nobody holds like Rabbi Nachman's interpretation, because Rabbi Nachman claims that the Machlokes of Yudin or Shimon, but he also looked at not only applied by the place of the conditions in the cabinet and by the ice cream in the freezer that you set aside, but if I missed the party, that's okay, but you didn't have Hachanasar Bailam, you didn't have Hachanasar Gavre, it's Mukhan Me'elov, that's the way you normally learn. No, what that happens is wrong. Even if the food came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, or the Kli came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, in the middle of Yom Tov, it would also be a dispute. So the Gemara says the other Amorim thinks that he's wrong. That if you have no like Yomu, if something came into existence in the middle of Shabbos, you're not Yom Tov, everybody would agree that it's Mukhan. Even if Shimon would agree that it's forbidden to eat it. So if it's a kind of girl, some letters, with all the base thing that comes out should be no like Yomu, and everybody should agree that it's Mukhan. That's why nobody knows like Rav Nachman. They hold that point is wrong. Then the Gemara says the other Amorim thinks that Rabbah is wrong. They don't believe in the whole instance, they don't believe in the whole Dinah Papa. They think there is no such thing. And then we have a third and a fourth reason. That's what we're up to now. The Gemara gives a third time and a fourth time, a fourth interpretation for the mission. The third reason the Gemara gave is on the second line from the bottom of that basin and base, Rav Yosef Amar. Rav Yosef says the reason for the Yisur of the base is you should say it's an oshus. It is a thing that gets forbidden to give forth fruit from the tree on Shabbos. You don't think it's some of our coats there. Not allowed to give forth branches, not allowed to give forth flowers. Not only not allowed to give forth, the Mishnah says that you're not permitted to lean on a tree, or even as you walk in the street, let's say to hit the bushes or something, to move the bushes because it's considered mukhtar. Because you're not allowed to break off a branch, but the Chacham forbidden even to touch the branches. Even to lean on a tree or something like that. Even says if you have a hammock that's tied on between two different trees and you're not touching the tree below. You're just laying on the hammock, so you're not permitted to rest on the hammock because the hammock is supported by the tree. Unless you have hooks that are screwed into the tree and the hammock is hanging on the nails, not hanging onto the tree directly. If that's the Gemara calls in the end of the Erev, and that's 3 days to go. You're not permitted to climb on the tree, you may break off a branch. You're not allowed to use the hammock that's tied onto the branches because it's attached to the tree. But if the hammock is attached to a nail, which is done attached to the tree, that's very squanky move. And then the Gemara says that it's permissible. So the Gemara says, in order to make sure that people don't break off branches and don't pull their fruit from the trees, they made there is a rabbanon that was that even if the fruits fall off from the trees on their own, tell you it's on the ocean, the apples and the pears fell off on Shabbos and Yontif on their own, you're not allowed to eat those apples or pears. The Gemara sounds like it's saying over here The Lord is to make sure that people don't violate the usurper. It's on ocean side. Yes, he says that's why they feel all extended as they need. Another example, you're not permitted to eat the bait fish and all the Shabbos of the Yom Tov, because if you allow the fellow to eat the egg that is born on Shabbos the Yom Tov, they may think that he's allowed to eat the pears that fell off from the tree, and what you eat, not very permitted to eat the pears that fell off from the tree. No. If he eats the pears that fell off from the tree, this may lead him to break off the branches from the tree. So he marches the best of the on his way. You have no right to make a day. You have no right to forbid something because you're afraid someone's going to violate an instant of that bummer. The Torah says, the Torah gives the Chachamim the authorization to make Zeyrus to that bummer. Right, Rashi quotes over here, Shmaitim es Mishmati. I feel Mishmaitim es Mishmati. That's the part that's quoted by the Gemara Nidhomis on that Chachamim. It gives the Koyach, it gives the Mishus to the Chachamim to institute Zeyrus to that bummer. Otherwise it will be a violation of that Tosis. What right does the Rabbana have to add on to the Din Hacher? Says in the Chumash, but it says, Tifal Adam Shemachim Tadar Shemachim Tadar Shemachim Tadar, this Constitution cannot have any amendments. Not like the United States Constitution, they can take off, they can add on, they can change it, whatever they want. Here the Torah says there are 613 mitzvahs, all of them are hosted in a matter of English way, you can't add on any mitzvah, you can't take off any mitzvah. The Akhenei Chachamim have all these zeros to Rabbanah, have all the mitzvahs to Rabbanah. The Torah explains in Eretz that the Chumash itself authorizes the Rabbanah to make it zero. What is that? A Shmartim as Mishmarti, a two Mishmaris and Mishmarti. If the Chachamim are afraid that someone's going to violate them, have they there? But then they're authorized to institute a Gzeira de Rabban. But that's only if you have a milta de shchita. If you think that if you allow people to bless Shaykh when Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, for sure someone's going to forget and carry. It happens all the time on Yom Kippur. Someone always forgets and carries the mouth of the shul. Whenever a Yom Kippur falls down on Shabbos, somebody always forgets. Somehow, religious people are normal, wouldn't carry on Shabbos. So there's always, in every community, there's always some religious Jew who forgot which has his power, forgot his master for sure, or something like that. So the Chachamim cut down whatever they could. So they say, when Rosh Hashanah falls down on Shabbos, we forbid everybody to blow the shofar, because they're afraid that someone's going to forget and carry the shofar. When Sukkot falls down on Shabbos, we forbid everybody to be shaking the ruler, because someone's going to forget to carry the ruler. They really should have forbid saying to you, the Musa. They should have said, you're not allowed to daven either. But the Zman of Allah, they had no Sidur, at least the daven by itself, so there was nothing to carry. If they would have lived today, they would have made it today, not a lot of daven. They would have said, the Chazm should daven, and be mercy to everybody, you should listen. Nobody should daven, and no one can actually run to carry a master. But the Zman of Allah, there was no master, they used to daven by itself. That's kind of a big problem on that. How come if you have a bid on Shabbos, why do you allow the bid? Why aren't you afraid that the moral is going to count? Okay, that's one of the instances. And Shannon gives seven answers on that question. A lot of answers. No, the cash is an item in a cash. Always Shannon asks the question. And there's no one answer. They give seven answers on that question. The very beginning of the Megillah, the Abdallah, that basically gives the few in the Ely, the Megillah rattles off all the seven answers one after the other. One of the answers is, like you mentioned, that the only time you're afraid someone's going to carry is, if it's Tia Shefa, the Hakor Hayav is Tia Shefa. All the Jews in the world have to blow Shefa. If you have millions of Jews have to blow Shefa, so for sure we're afraid that someone's going to carry the Shefa. But how many Jews do you have on any one given Shabbos? Not so many Jews. You're not afraid that there's going to be a thing in the Shabbos. That's one answer. Another answer is that what you're afraid of, you want to forbid the evil on Shabbos, but it says explicitly in the Chumash that you do a bit maybe even when it falls out on Shabbos. Another answer. Then Hashem gives more answers. That's seven answers on the question. It's unclear. They weren't too sure what the correct answer is. It's a very good question. Here we have a clause of Hakamim, and we have a right to make it very to that bottom, then there's something really to worry about. If you have a look at the Rosh Shikha, what goes with the Rabban? If you have a prophet, Chashash, Oiger, pray that if you're going to require of people that they should eat Shal Shudis, someone's going to carry the Matzah to Shul. Why should they carry the Matzah to Shul? Prophet, Chashash? You know, they know every week the Shal Shudis, every week there's food. Nobody ever carries. What's the problem? You don't have to worry about some prophet, Chashash. Only if you have a Chashash, Kari. If you have a real Chashash, this is something to worry about. If it's a prophet, then you're not worried. Or what happens if it's not prophet? But the thing that you're afraid of is you're afraid that people are going to violate an Aveira de Rabbanah. Not that you're afraid you're going to violate another area of the biblical violation. Pray, if you leave everything the way it is, people are going to violate another area of Adam. We have to institute a zera to prevent people from violating another area of Adam. That's considered a zera. A lot of stuff that's insufficient leave. You have to ask, in order to be allowed to institute a zera of Adam, there shouldn't be a violation of Balthosis. You have to have a real solid chashash, what to be worried about. If you're afraid that one thing a year for someone's going to do an aveira, that's a new situation, they have no right to be judged. If they make it there on the proper chashash, it's a new thing about faces between the God and God. They have no right to make such a day. Or they only have a right to make it there if they're afraid people will violate an aveira, they're right. It's not what to worry about, but if you're only afraid that they will live there, you want to make it there to Rabban to prevent people from violating it. If they need to the Rabbanon, that's considered insufficient need, and if the limb is too touchy, there will be a violation of Balto. So that's a Abai Kasha against Rav Yosef. It's a Abai Kasha, how can you tell me? Let's say it's on the stream, if the fruit fell down from the tree by themselves in the middle of Shabbos Yantar, if it didn't eat the fruit, less you'll get carried away with yourself and you'll pluck off more fruit from the tree. So you're forbidding the fellow from eating the basis, and also less. If you're allowed to eat the shenol, the people will think that they're allowed to eat the parents that fell down, which is really with her. But we don't want them to do that with the Rabbanon, because then they climb up and break off in the bridge. So it's like a zero to zero. The Gemara says, no, we didn't. Rav Yosef didn't mean to say that they instituted a later zero, forbidding people from eating the base of Shemol, the less they go and violate the zero of Teres HaNoshrim. What it rather means is when they initially instituted the zero of the Rabbanon, of Teres HaNoshrim, the fruits that fall down from the tree are forbidden to be eaten. Anything that looks like Teres HaNoshrim was included, even though the Hashash is climbing up and breaking off the fruit doesn't apply. And therefore, even if the original Zera de Rabbanon against Teres HaNoshrim, even included a Beit HaShanol. That's what Rav Yosef touches up in his interpretation. And the final shot was of Yitzchok, along the same lines as Rav Yosef. It's not that the Beit HaShanol is part of the Zera de Rabbanon of Teres HaNoshrim, the fruit that fall down from the tree is also to eat. There is something out of this, which is rather part of the difference there, very similar, not part of the difference there. There is a din that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you're not allowed to squeeze out juice in order to get the juice. Every Yom Tov people eat the same Shabbos. They know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to squeeze out the orange juice to make orange juice, you're not allowed to squeeze out the lemon and the tea. What about on Yom Tov, on that for the Yom Tov, it's on the turns out here, the first fruit in basin, but then exclusively that you're not allowed to squeeze out the fruit even on Yom Tov. I should be Mutter, a message, but that's the same as this. These big sentences that you're going to have to give them all. The father of the guy, Kashi, will have to discuss with them. So the more makes it clear that you're not permitted to squeeze that juice on Yom Tov, just like you're not allowed to squeeze that juice on Shabbos. And this day, this Easter of squeezing out, apparently was an Easter that people used to violate. So in order to be Mechazic this Easter, especially on Yom Tov, people will squeeze that thing for sex. All about even the people who know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to squeeze out, you're not allowed to, more people squeeze out fruit. So in order to strengthen this issue of squeezing out fruit, they made a further behavior, in order to give it to the teeth. So you say to me, even let's say if you cut up a grapefruit, and when you cut up a grapefruit, you cut up a lemon, and you take a piece of lemon and you put it into the cup of tea, you don't squeeze it out. And that's okay, well, you don't squeeze it out. But what do you do with the juice on the plate when you cut up the grapefruit? There's going to be a little juice there. Can you drink that juice? You didn't violate anything, that juice squeezed out by itself. When you were cutting, by the slight pressure, the juice came out. That's called mashkin shizogu. The juice squeezed out by itself. Are you permitted to drink the mashkin shizogu? So the Mishnah has an asher ha-shabbos is a zera de rabbanon. Mashkin shizogu me'alei and the juice that came out from the fruit or the vegetable. Even though it oozed out by itself, it's forbidden to drink that juice because it is very shema yitzchot. We want to prevent people from squeezing out the juice intentionally, so we take it. Even if it oozed out by itself, it's also awesome to give pieces to this juice. So that yitzchot claims that's the zera de rabbanon over here. The base of shenoldo is part of that zera, mashmi shenoldo. Then we will go into a detailed discussion over here. What is the slight difference between Rav Yosef as opposed to Rav Yitzchok? Rav Yosef says that the Beit HaShanol is part of the Gzeir of the Rabbanon of Beres HaNoshim, and Rav Yitzchok says no, it's part of the Gzeir of the Rabbanon of Mashke Shizom. And the Gemara says that, well, it's not really a Mashke, it's really an Eichel. Why is it not a Mashke? It's very, very liquidy. A raw egg is not a hard-boiled egg, it's a raw egg. the right is the city, it doesn't matter. It's still not the Achrayim point out. It's still not a master. A master doesn't mean this city versus you don't drink an egg when you're thirsty. The definition of a master means a beverage. It doesn't mean a liquid eating. Right. This, you're really going to eat the egg. You're not going to drink it as a beverage when you're thirsty. So even before it, even when it's raw, it's considered a nichol. It's considered a nichol. You see, it's smart, not a master. On Yom Kippur, take an example. On Yom Kippur, there is a difference for halacha between eating Oichlim and eating Mashkin. That if you eat Oichlim on Yom Kippur, it's both the difference, but there's a different shear. How much do you have to eat in order to violate the four of the day? If you're eating an Oichel, then the Mishnah says in Yuma, the way it says in Yuma, that if you eat Kikosev, it's Hagatma. The size of a big day, this cafe, that's the full Kishir, that's the full violation of the Yisrael. If you're drinking a Mashkin, then the shear is below Lugmok. Much smaller shear, the amount of Mashkin that you hold on one side of the mouth. So the Maharam Sheikh has a shiva l'aloch, and what about the Hazanim who drink raw eggs on Yom Kippur? How much of a raw egg do they have? What size raw egg do they have to eat on Yom Kippur? How much of a raw egg? Not l'aloch. So how much of a raw egg do you have to drink in order to violate the full avera of eating on Yom Kippur? Do you treat the raw egg like an ochel, so you need a kasher as a gasher, or do you treat it like a mashke because it's liquid in the year, so if you have a melagugma, it's enough. But a man should write in the tshuva that has the status of an eichel. It's not considered a mashke. So later Achrayim point out that it's an foolish gemara. He quotes this gemara as a thing. Man Sheik himself quotes this gemara. And others point out independently also, without referring to the man Sheik. They also point out that this gemara is going to perish like that. So your eggs are considered eichel. It's not considered mashke. So that's why the gemara says that's why Rabbi Yosef felt that it's better to assume that the dates of Shinoldo should really fall under the Xerah of the Rabbanon of Keri Tanoshim and not fall under the Mashu Shadov, who has nothing to do with the Mashu. And Rabbi Yitzchok tells that even though dates of Shinoldo is an Oichel, it's not a Mashke, but he feels, in most times, he feels that it's better to say that it belongs to the category of the Xerah or Mashu Shadov, because when it has a fruit, yet the juice is absorbed inside the fruit. And then when you squeeze out, let's say, loses out by itself, and you squeeze out the juice, so the juice comes from the inside, and it goes out. From the inside of the lemon, or the inside of the grapefruit, and then it loses out. So the same is true regarding the beta shenolga. The beta was inside the time, the was inside the name of the iron of the hen. And then it comes out of the goof of the hen, it comes, it gets exposed to the outside. And this is in contrast to the situation of Paris and Ocean, but the fruit is standing exposed on the tree, it's meguva. The only thing is that it's attached and you're not allowed to rip it off. And then it falls off by itself, so the Chachamim forbid you from eating the Paris Hanoshim, even though you didn't rip it off. So there, the fruit was meguva the whole time. How can you compare a basis and olga to the case of Paris Hanoshim? It's more comparable, that's what Yitzchak said. It's more comparable to the case of Mashka Shazoba because it was meguva. Just like by the Mashka Shazoba, the juice was absorbed inside the lemon and inside the grapefruit. And into the base is absorbed inside the body of the tanga. That's a machlokes, a detailed machlokes between basically Rabbi Yosef and the same thing. They say that base should hold it. The Shabbos of the Yom Kippur falls under a certain Zera the Rabbanan, and that's why you're not allowed to eat it. Which Zera the Rabbanan? So they argue about the people. Is it this Zera or is it that Zera? And the other one was under the first two Amorim things. Rav Nachman and Rabbi, they think it doesn't fall under either the Xer of Teres HaNoshim, nor under the Xer of Mashkin Shadov. What does it have to do with Teres? It's neither Teres HaNoshim nor Mashkin Shadov. The Chachamim made a separate Xer of Mashkin Shadov and a separate Xer of Teres HaNoshim. It has nothing to do with the base of Shadov. No malacha was done over here. It is an interesting discussion in the Ramban, in the commentary on the bottom of the list, later in the third parish in our the third parish in Masechet starts off, that's on that subject on the day, ain't certain dogim in Hadidre in the yard. You're forbidden to go hunting, you're not allowed to go catch fish from the pond. Hadidre is a pond on Yonkis. So Rashi and Pesach gets right away, and the Mishnah on Chagim on the day, why is it forbidden to go fishing on Yonkis? Why not consider it a Chomeshish? On Shabbos, we understand that Beidah is forbidden to catch a fish, and a Kiddur Kishon is forbidden to catch the fish, and even in the water is a violation of Seda. To catch the fish, you take it out of the water, it's going to die, so that's in addition to the violation of Seda, it's a violation of Kiddur Kishon. Let's say there's an animal running around in the forest, and I take a gun, and I shoot the animal. So then it's a double violation. Number one, it's Seda, the animal is no longer running around. And then we go into the sin of neshama. The animal is dead. If I set a trap and I catch the wild animal and it's still alive, then I've only violated the Yisra of Seza, and I haven't violated yet the Yisra of Nisra of Hashem. But if I shoot the animal, then I violate both. If I stop at gunshot, but I understand why I'm not allowed to go fishing, and you're not allowed to go hunting, it's Nisra of Hashem, and it's stayed in the Talmud with the Zah. But if I was on Yonsis, the Nevi Yehuda has a famous shooter where he says, if you go hunting and it's dangerous to you, you may break their illusions, or the animal may get you. But then he says it's forbidden to go hunting, unless you're a hunter of the Parnassus. He says, if you do it for fun, and you're putting yourself into such fun, look, people eat for fun. But then, and people who ski usually, there's a high percentage of them, let's say, 5-10% break a limb or something. So then he says it's forbidden. So you're not permitted to put your life into danger. But if that's what you do for a living, you have to go hunting for Parnassus, then he says it's permissible. Why is it looking for Parnassus? You're allowed to violate him out there. But he says, no, there is a thing that you never committed to put your life or your body, even just to break them in, into Sakhon or Sakhon Sakhon. But it's only forbidden if it's a topic that people are nervous about. The thing is, Sakhon Sakhon, if it's a big thing, then you may get high blood pressure. Okay? So, this is a far-fetched Sakhon Sakhon. I know a lot of people think, you don't have high blood pressure. You know, the way that stuff is concerned with Sakhon Sakhon is that normal people are not nervous about. What if it is a Sakhon Sakhon that people are nervous about? That is forbidden. But the Parnassus purposely, it's understood that people don't worry. Because the Parnassus, people do all kinds of things. Oh, and he quotes the Pasuk. A law will not say yes, not sure. That phrase is based on. The Pasuk says, a law will not say yes, not sure. The Pasuk says, the all more people in court, you have to pay the worker on the same day. If you have a babysitter, or you have a guy who fixes the refrigerator, or fixes the machine or something, or the maid makes the bed, washes the dishes, whatever. So there's a bit in the third. The yom is in Korah, you have to pay their salary on the same day. The problem for our stuff is called daycare, you violate an aver if you wait till tomorrow. This din only applies to the serious Korah. It doesn't apply, let's say, if I buy a television, I don't pay on time. If I broke your window and I don't pay right away. If I stole the loan deal and I cashed it up and I don't pay right away, I don't violate that deal. It's different. I violate it today. I violate other things. I don't violate this deal of the Yom HaKippur. It's a special thing. The Yom HaKippur only applies to serious terror. So the Kurdish has to give a rationale. Why? Why is it limited up to serious terror? So the terror says, a law will not pay us not show. It's for that panache, for those dollars, for that amount of money that he agreed to put his life in danger. That's how the Gemara quotes that Tishrei. The Gemara quotes that life in Tishrei. And that part they can interpret a law will not say, that's not sure. He puts his nefesh, he puts his life into danger. People sometimes do all kinds of dangerous things. They drive, they fly airplanes, and they go hunting, and they're to make a panos. So the Shaila is, how are you allowed to do that? You're not allowed to put your life into danger. So the answer is, it's not a 50-50 Sakhon Sakhon or more. If it was happy to be 50-50 or more, then you're talking about allowed to do it even for the purpose of panos. And yeah, but it's less than a topic of shelter. So the question is it, does it have the status of a topic stuff on and out? So that depends whether people are nervous or not. So when, with respect to Panas, you know, it's that people do things that are slightly dangerous for the purpose of Panas. So then it's not for the purpose of Panas, the people don't worry. But if it's not for the purpose of Panas, if you tell the person, if the person tells you again, that is not going to happen. If he's not, what's going to happen? If he agrees in advance, not if he does the work that he says, I'm not going to pay you till later. If he agrees in advance, or if it's understood in advance, and he's not going to pay him every day, then it's okay. But if it's not understood, then there is a serious thing. Not only that, because it's time, as a whole, just a little safer. On this din, I'm saying on the same day, apparently in Europe, they used to violate his din. Okay, I have a lot of form on Lashon Hara, you know, you've got women covering the area, also wrote a whole paper because they violated that. So you have a whole paper about the paying on the same day. It's more than a paper. He says if you pay by check, you hook no good. The person has the right to insist that he wants cash. Unless he wants cash for improper purposes, they don't want to declare it on me. I've got to have time to know from these so the deal is that you're only able to pay in money. You have to pay for the patients like that. You have to pay them. You have to pay them. You have to pay them. You have to pay cash. You can't pay him with other things. But if he says he wants cash and not check, also he says, I didn't have to give him that cash. Today it's probably different, but today it's understood that you have to pay a check in order to keep records. You should keep records, you should keep records. It's understood that that didn't work. So the, see, one thing about hunting in Israel, it was supposed to be said that the lady who is told in the Hilchos Shechitah about hunting. So he says that if you put your life into the life of your limb, and to smite Satana, it's only permissible if you do it with Torah Tanakh, so then it's understood that that's normal, people would do that. But the fellow just does it for fun, like the princes used to do in New York, they used to go hungry for fun, they used to break their arms, and break their legs, and whatever, but then it's just like a tradition. So then it's a tradition of something with Torah, because he needs the food. So then, with Torah Tanakh, with Torah Achila, so then it's mutter to go on. So on the weekdays, you're allowed to go hunting. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to hunt because of the malacha. Pesach, the malacha means to listen to Shana, when you're going to skin the fish. And on Yom Kippur, it's forbidden to hunt because of Pesach and because of the listen to Shana. So Rashi and Pesach, the Rebbe Shana there. Right. Okay. Right. So on Yom Kippur, you're killing the animal with water, but the hunter is off. So that's what Rebbe Shana there. Why? Just like you're allowed to kill the animal. Mm-hmm. Right, then it's not
Pesach.
So
the whole
Hebrew
means that it still has rights to swim around, and I don't know
who that is. Right, yeah. I mean, if there's only one fish, but it can swim the whole length of the whole pond, then it's not considered deep, though. It's not caught yet. But if it's caught in a very small fish tank already, and it can't run away from you, you just stick your hand in and it touches, then you're not violating Pesach. Yeah. So this is what all the Rishonim ask. Why is it forbidden to hunt on Yom Kippur Tzeis HaNefesh? Why is it forbidden to squeeze out the juice on Yom Kippur Tzeis HaNefesh? And why is it forbidden to rip off the fruit from the tree on Yom Kippur? All this is Tzeis HaNefesh? No, Tzeis is one of the 39 Malach, the second Malach. To hunt an animal on Shabbat Yom Kippur. Same as Shabbos. That's the kasha. But on Yom Kippur, you're permitted to shech the animal. But why aren't you permitted to hunt the animal? That's the kasha that all the Rishonim ask. So Rashi gives an answer. On the Mishnah, called Gimel on the days, Rashi says at the beginning of the third verse, I'm really sure the reason why you're not allowed to go hunting on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to squeeze out the juice, you're not allowed to pluck off your fruit from the tree, by the Mishnah, the Ehesh in the air of Yom Kippur. But the only malachas you're allowed to do on Yom Kippur, the purpose of the Hamekdash, are such malachas that you couldn't have gone on Erev Yom Kippur. Namely, that the shechita, they didn't have any refrigeration to eat the chef immediately before they were about to eat the food. So if you're going to chef them on Erev Yom Kippur, chayish, you have to be worried about mishma bitzur, the meat is going to get spoiled, it's going to get ruined. Then you come in, the Erev Yom Kippur, going to get spoiled if you leave it overnight. I will say there was a direction of food in the Bajon, the Yanakana didn't do that, he should have caught the animal on Erev, he should have plucked it off in the tree. And Erev, he should have squeezed out the juice on Erev, so it wouldn't get spoiled. So whatever malachas you could do on Erev, because you're not permitted to do on Yom. That's what Rashi is. Tosfos is doesn't like Rashi, Tosfos on the beginning of the third paragraph, and Tosfos on Adav, presents the exact same Kasha Rashi, how can it be? The Abba Machlokes, Tosfos on Gimel Amarav presents it. The Abba Machlokes later, and then it's just here the faces, if you look on Gimel Amarav, it's similar around 30 lines down, better to start from the bottom way down to the lower. Better to start from the top. They just explain why you're not permitted to rip off the fruits on Yom Kippur. You're not permitted to squeeze out the juice on Yom Kippur. Right. Whatever you could have done earlier, you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. That's no malacha they've done. The chicken lays the egg, whether it doesn't consult me, whether it's going to lay the egg. No, we say the gzeirah of Rabbanim applies to all senses. Right. Even though the reason for the gzeirah definitely doesn't apply, but we say that fool, he's going to yank the egg out from the head. No one in his lifetime ever does that. The fuller fruit from the tree, yes, that we do all the time. But we don't allow you to eat the fruit that fell off on their own because it's there that you may get carried away with yourself and pull the fruit off. We don't allow you to drink the juice that oozed out by itself because you may get carried away and squeeze it out on your own. But here, it's not that we're afraid you're going to yank out the egg from inside of the egg. It's just that it's part of the same thing. There's no reason for the Zera certainly doesn't apply. The Zera applies. That's the Rabbi Yerichitzel. That's the Rabbi Yitzchokzel. But here the question is, why is it forbidden to hunt on Yomtov? Why is it forbidden to squeeze the Jews? Why is it forbidden the class to rip off the Zera? Why not consider that an extra? Rashi gave the answer that whatever is extra lot of people's own, you're not permitted to do on Yomtov. Where did Rashi get this idea from? Only what you permit, only what you were unable to do on every Yomtov. But based on the Gemara, based of course the Gemara, we're having parentheses in the cases, eight lines in the end of the page, we're having parentheses in Samon, Chav Ches on the day. So they refer you to a Gemara, who the Lord Machshir of the Rizid is used later on that Chav Ches, which is that Yehuda and the Chachamim. What exactly are you allowed to do on Yom Tov for the purpose of Echam Yom Tov? So let's say I took, on Yom Tov I'm interested in having a half cup of coffee, I take the kettle and I fill it up with water under the faucet, and I take the water and I put it on the fire, and I turn on the fire, and I let it strike a match, the commissioner later, generally seems to be any city of Bona, I let it strike a match. But if the pilot light is on anyway, and I turn on the fire, I turn on the gas, and the gas is lit from the pilot light to hot water, you permit it to be hot water, and I do bishop, that's permitted on Yom Tov. So the question is, what if the kettle is broken? In order to cook my water, I have to fix the kettle. I have to take a hammer. And bang the kettle into the kitchen. I will debate the kettle, or the top doesn't open, does open, whatever. In order to be able to fill the kettle full of water, I have to start banging the kettle. The kettle is not broken, and it's not about tapish. If it's a broken tree, it's not about tapish. Unless I have this delicious steak that I'm about to eat, whatever chicken, whatever I'm about to eat, I'm going to eat. And the knife is broken and the fork is broken, so I take the fork and twist it backwards and I twist it straight. And the knife is dull, it doesn't mash. So I sharpen the knife. So to sharpen the knife is a mission later, I mash even if I back in the answer. That's a violation of not gonna pop the shelf. The fork is twisted and I straighten it out. So it means I had a broken fork and I fixed the fork. So that's a violation of not gonna pop the shelf. But what if I don't have any other fork? I don't have any other knife? The only way for me, if I don't want to eat with my fingers, he lives in the 20th century, he wants to eat with the fork at the knife, he wants to warm up the water in the kettle. So is the heter of HaNefesh so encompassing, is it so inclusive that you're even permitted to fix the broken fork and the broken knife and the broken kettle? He's saying no. So that's the Machlokes Katan, that's called Mashiva HaNefesh. Mashiva HaNefesh means to fix the pot or to fix the knife in order to be able to cook. So if you're of the opinion that that too is permissible, you're even allowed to fix the broken knife and the broken pot. And the Chachamim disagree and they say that you're not allowed. How do we pass an halacha of Maitre? The Gemara says, the din is like a Yudah halacha of the Ein Morin case. The din is, strictly speaking, it's mutter, but you're not allowed to announce in public the din that it's mutter. If a person knows on his own that that's halacha, then you're allowed to fix the broken knife, you're allowed to fix the broken pot. But if someone comes to ask a shayla, they tell him, Okay. So the Gemara says...
You don't say that this by Rebbe
or
Moshe?
No. Because we know that on a Brit Milah, those are written, when it's up this Milah, they won't be Mechal Shabbos. And here, Yom Tov, as it is, you know that people violate a lot of things on Yom Tov that go far beyond what the Halakha allows. So the Chacham says that even what the Din allows, it shouldn't be allowed. You have to limit what people do on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says on that Chav Ches, even if you follow it, you need to have to be the way you talk to me, through our din. The Mashir and HaNefesh are permitted on Yom Tov. Even though the din is Mashir and his Mutter, but we have a passage that limits it, it's only if it's E-Echelatus and Vodyom. When did the fork and the knife of the kettle break? If the fork was broken since yesterday, I went to the office on Yom Tov, and I didn't bother to fix it, then it comes to the denial of Yom Tov, I have no fork, I have no knife, I have no kettle. And if he would have stayed home, he could have fixed the fork and knife. He just didn't bother. He has no time during the weekday. But then that's the Machshir and Sheesh Shalatas in Bodyam. He could have fixed it on the weekday. Then even Rabbi Yehuda says it's forbidden in Atayra. It says in Atayra to fix it on Yom Tov. The only kind of defense is permissible is if the swap broke on Yonkers. Or the swap broke before, but he wasn't aware of the fact that it's broken. It was Machshir Shi'iyah Shalat and Bagyam, he just wasn't able to fix it before Yonkers. Then, and only then, does Rabbi say that he's permitted to fix even the Machshir Eichon Nefesh, even though it's not actual Eichon Nefesh, it's a step in advance. Rabbi says that he's allowed to. Mikra Din Nassau Tassu. Allah will be voluntary for those who know the business in his earthly. The basis of the story is not Gemara, but the distinction between Eshalat and Bagyam. Any Eshalat and Bagyam only applies in the area of Machshir, to fix the broken knife or to fix the broken fork. But to cook the food, it would appear clearly from the Gemara that even if it was Eshalat and Bagyam, even if he could have cooked all the food and baked all the bread, and there is nothing in that situation, it doesn't matter. It's still Muslim and Atheria and the Rabbanim to do everything on Yom. Let's play his time against Rashi. After Rashi said, the reason why it's forbidden to go hunting and to pluck off the parrots in the tree to squeeze out the Jews is because that's your last lesson for Yom. Whatever Echon Nefesh could have done on Erev Yom Tov, he's forbidden to do on Yom Tov, because it's Akashi. But that distinction between Echolatus and the Echolatus is only in the area of Mashirin. That was the source of the dispute that we allowed to fix the broken force of the cloud. So we passed in Halakha the Yom saying that you're allowed to, that's only if you couldn't have done it with Bodhiyam. But if it's not, then that's Ishmaelish. That's a much better answer than it, even if it's actually allowed from Bodhiyam. It should also be Muslim. Let's play this cash. The Samashan say, I'm not to be taught. The Samashan say it's not true. And he's saying, no, when the Gemara makes the distinction between Eshalatus and the Eshalatus, not, you shouldn't say it's only limited to Machshire. It's even in the area of Erev Nefesh Mamish. I also distinguish, there is such a group of Rishayim. It faces all of the tests, you have the obscure Rishayim, the Laruha, the Rav Yotas, the Yorzaruha, the Rishayim that you usually don't study in Rishayim. But the regular standard Rishayim that you
usually people used to hear one definition and the Pesukim explained that it's wrong. The standard definition that everybody usually gives is it depends what the malacha is being done to. When you cook food or you bake cake or cookies, the malacha is being done to the food. When you chef the game, the malacha is being done to the animal that you're going to eat. Whenever the malacha is being done to the food, we call that whenever the malacha is done to the fork or the knife or to the pot, that we call machshir. That was always generally accepted as the standard definition. Some Achrayim have that definition. So the later Achrayim say that that's not correct. It's 100% not correct. Let's say when you turn on the fire, you turn on the gas range and the fire catches flame from the pilot light, but the malacha is done to the gas, you're not going to eat the gas, and nobody says that's called Mashir. That's called Echon Nefesh Mamash. Or for example, the Gemara talks later that you want to shech the behemoth, you want to shech the chicken on Yom Tov. So you have to get a shofet and a knife and a chicken in one place. What if the knife is in one place, the shofet is in another place, and the chicken is over here? So the Gemara says, so you carry whatever you have to carry. So the Gemara says, if you want, you can carry the knife to the chicken. There's no air. And they carry it. And the carry on the onset is also forbidden. And that's just, or it's a nefesh or something. Well, only if you have a Terech HaYom Tov. You have to have a Terech HaYom Tov. You don't learn that. Only there. You have to have a Torah. But Shalom HaTorah, you're not allowed to carry.
So the Gemara had the whole discussion in Machlokes Rishonim. They still do. He recommend you should carry it. A Sheikh is an old man and he can't carry. He can't walk. So would we prefer, would we recommend to carry the Sheikh? Or would we recommend to carry the knife with the behemoth to the Sheikh? The Gemara has a whole discussion what he do. So the Ramban goes out on that Gemara that this is not Machshir Echon Nefesh, this is Echon Nefesh Mamash. How do we know Echon Nefesh Mamash? If you carry the chicken, I understand, you're carrying the food that the dog is going to eat, but if you carry the knife, or you carry the shekhet, then the loss is not being done to the food, the loss is being done to something extraneous. So obviously, you see from the Gemara that that's not the correct definition. In fact, there's a sefer that you type on Malachas Yontif. Malachas Yontif was written by a great drunk who died before the war by the name of Meshach Sapolotsky. He was a yeshiva and a yeshiva in Brit. There was a yeshiva in Brit. A Chantal Reshit was the Rebbe Brit. He wasn't the Rosh Hashiva. Chantal Reshit was the Rosh Hashiva and Balazin Yeshiva until it closed down. So once introduced after 2 hours of secular studies a week, so the Rosh Hashiva said he was going to close the Yeshiva rather than introduce what they want to introduce, that they should know how to write Russian, they should know how to multiply and divide. Whatever, to know a little arithmetic, elementary arithmetic, and just to teach the Russian language, how to read and write Russian. There's an excuse that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik married his granddaughter. So the excuse was then the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the father of Rav Meir Bar Yochai. And he said, tell us to close down all Yeshiva. But then when Rav Chaim lost his job, the Yeshiva closed down and lost his job. So then he became, he was appointed to Rav in Brit. But he wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva in Brit. There was a Yeshiva in Brit, which was headed by our Rav, Rav Meir Sokolovsky, somebody else. He had learned from Rav Chaim. He learned from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, but he had nothing to do with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. They had a yeshiva. So this Rav Moshe Sokolovsky wrote two spores. And he wrote one sefer that's only dedicated to Malachas Yontif. That's the title of the book. And he quotes every single source that there is to quote under the sun and existing on Echon Nefesh and Mitzvot and Machshirin. The whole long book, you have to have a lot of people to sit and read and read and read. He quotes so much. Full of thought material, quotes everything that there is to say. So in his book, he points out this error, that people, he quotes on which our brains talk like that, that it was generally assumed that the definition of Echon Nefesh is when the Malacha is done to the food, if you're going to eat. And the definition of Mashivin is when the Malacha is done to the fork, to the knife, something other than the food. The shows from his mother that that's not correct, that sometimes you're doing the Malacha to the knife, and it's still called Echon Nefesh Mamish. So how do you determine whether it's Echon Nefesh or Mashivin Nefesh? So he says, he quotes from Achrayim who said that the definition runs as follows. Whenever the malacha that you do only leads up to eating the food on Yom Tov, then it's called Echon Nefesh Mamish. Why am I carrying the shofar to this house or carrying the knife to that house? But I leave the knife over there. It's the shofar's knife. He's only going to use it to shef the bain, and then after Yom Tov he's going to have to take it back to the other place, to the slaughterhouse. He's not going to use it in this house for any other purpose. Let's say the shofar, you're going to carry the shofar to this house in order to shef the chicken or the bain. The shofar wants to be here. He doesn't want to be here. He's only here for the purpose of shefting. You're going to have to carry him back. I'm young, but they're still young, but whatever. So whatever the malacha that you're doing is only going to lead up to Echon Nefesh today, that's called Echon Nefesh Mamash. Let's say I turn on the fire. Why do I turn on the fire? I'm interested. After Yom Tov, I'm going to turn off the fire. It's not that I need a fire. So I turn on the fire on Yom Tov, let's say 11 o'clock in the morning, I'm young, but I turn on the fire. Because I'm going to use this fire to cook some food on the Masor Yom Tov. The minute we say Havdol on the Masor Yom Tov, we're going to turn off the fire. Then we want to cook again, and we'll turn on the fire again later. So the turning on the fire is only going to lead up, is only for the purpose of cooking the food. Now, Shana King, 16 of the broken fork, once I straighten out the fork, and once I sharpen the knife, once I fix the kettle, I'm going to use that fork, knife, and kettle not only on Yom Tov. I'm going to use it all week long, and the rest of the time I'll have to break it again. And I have to fix it again. So whenever the results of the malacha are lasting, even past Yom Tov, even after Yom Tov, and my intention of fixing it is not only for the immediate use on Yom Tov, but for that, even after Yom Tov, then it's called Mashiv Echon Nefesh. That's not called Echon Nefesh. It's called Mashiv. That's a little, that's another thing. If I have a big piece of, I have a big piece of meat, a big piece of chicken, or that I'm only interested in drinking one cup of tea on Yom Tov, so I'm permitted to have tea with the whole of the kettle under the faucet. Still, let's say I want to drink one cup of tea on Yom Tov, and I want to drink a lot of tea after Yom Tov is over. So I'm permitted to hold the kettle under the faucet on Yom Tov, till it fills up to the top, and then put the whole kettle on top of the water. So why not on top of the fire? So why not say that all I need is the water for yomtiv? The water from the Tzur yomtiv is not needed for today. Why isn't that a violation of melacha? No, the toil is also with the rabba. So the Gemara says that the special din that I'm yomtiv, mark the shurim is permissible. If, let's say, I have a pot that I have on the fire, and I have and the pot is already on the fire, and then I take one piece of chicken and I put it in, another piece of chicken I put it in, another piece and I put it in, and every time I put in another piece of chicken in the pot, another piece of meat or something, that's an act of bishul. Then you have to stop once you reach the amount of food that you think you're going to use on your own. You have to be skimpy, let's say, someone may want a second portion, someone may want extra, whatever, be put in as much for sure that, you know, let's say you're going to bake cookies on your own, so you're going to have guests. So let's say you expect to have five guests coming over, and each one is going to eat maximum 10 cookies. You only got to bake 50 cookies. That's what it doesn't look like. You put cookies on the table, you're going to eat them. You don't need a list. The old mate, you're going to eat up the last cookies. So you're committed to the Ramban, so you're committed to cook a few extra, so to bake a few extra cookies, because it doesn't look nice if you're skinny. You're only allowed to bake as much as you need. But if you have one chicken and you put the whole piece of chicken in and one palm on top of the fire, it's one act of bishul. It's not many acts of bishul. Or if the pot is not on the fire, the pot is on the sink, and then I put all the pieces in, and then when I put the pot on top of the fire, it's one act of bishul and all of the chicken in the pot. And then the Gemara has a special din on good dynamo analysis. The Gemara says that on Yom Tov, once you have a heter of nefesh on part of the pot, a part of the kettle, then to harvest the shiurim is mutter, even lachatchila, knowing that you plan to use the rest on the kosha. Right, that's the machlokes in the Gemara. The Gemara explains that's a different answer. In the days of the Gemara, they didn't put all of the bread on one pan and put it in. They used to put its bread, a load of bread on the floor of the oven, then on this side, there would be not because mamash on the side, then on that side, then on the back, and then on the top. And everything would be baking while it's attached to the oven. Then when it would be finished baking, they would have to scrape it off there before it starts to burn. That's the Rizias HaPas. That's what they forbid with the Rabbanu. Rizias HaPas is not a malach at all. And Atera is not a malach, and the Rabban is also not a malach. But it's a bit of the Rabban and the Zera, because it's not from the Saka Maritza. But if you don't scrape it off, it's going to burn. So the Gemara says, there's a Machlekes HaTaim repacking that I've done, says it's even permissible to leave separate loaves of bread, even though the leading Elisha is a separate malach, and the putting it into the oven, each one is put in separately on this side and on that side and top and in the back and so on, each one is a separate act of Asiyah. Nevertheless, that's all mutter because you want the challah that you're going to eat. I'm only going to eat, let's say, one challah, two challahs on earth. And I'm going to have an oven full of challahs. I know the maize is in the sky, and I'm baking five challahs or ten challahs. Loads of extra challahs on Yom Tov, which I don't plan to eat today. So what in the world are you doing for? Just in order to say this part time after Yom Tov is over. If that's his reason that he did, he's doing the law on Yom Tov, but on Tzur Yom Tov he's not allowed. The Gemara says that his intention, in addition to that, is also that the bread that he eats on Yom Tov should taste better, because the Gemara says that hapat, the bread, tastes better, hapat nefesh yokov is not shahatanim olay. When the oven is more full, and all of the heat is more concentrated inside the oven, because every time you put in a challah on the walls, and on the top, and on the bottom, and on the back, so there's less out here, there's less empty space here, and the heat is going to be more concentrated, so the bread that you're going to eat today is going to be tastier. And then the Gemara says it's permissible to do a whole separate malacha of baking the other challahs and eating the other challahs in order that the challahs that you do eat should taste better. Oil is a different. Oil is a different thing. Oil is only wood in the Atera and also in the Rabbanan. Oil is also in the Rabbanan. The Gemara has a machlokes, as we mentioned briefly, the Gemara has a machlokes in Rabbi Rashi's that about this. How do you label, how do you determine whether any given situation is a heter or a heter shenra? If you cook food on Yom Tov, you plan to eat that food, and you bake cookies, and you bake bread, and you plan to eat it on Yom Tov, that's a heter shenra. What if he cooks food or he bakes bread and he plans to eat it on the Koyom? He absolutely does not plan to eat it on Yom. But theoretically, there exists the possibility of eating it on Yom. He already finished eating all of his children eggs, they're all plastic. Theoretically, let's say Yom Tov and Yeshua, they already finished eating at 1 o'clock. There may be other people, and now he's cooking a pleshit meal. They're not going to just eat pleshit. They're not going to eat pleshit again. Yom Tov is going to be over in another 2 hours. They're not going to eat. But the Gemara says is if he lives in a community where there are a lot of other Jews, if he lives in Monticello and all the Jews around the town, there's no one else around, and he cooks food on Yom Tov and Yeshua, and everybody finished eating, so there's no one to eat it. So it's a malach. No doubt about it. He's violating malach HaShem. But if he lives in New York City, there are millions of Jews here. Even if he hates, there exists the theoretical possibility that other Jews may want to come. He may invite them, maybe eat yet. But then they want to eat up all the food, so there's a theoretical possibility of having all the food eaten up on Yonsen. According to Rabbi holds that takes off the Easter deraita of cooking food on Yonsen. It's more than out there to cook food even though you don't plan to eat it on Yonsen, because of the theoretical possibility that it could be eaten on Yonsen. Now, Chizu disagrees with himself. Chizu says that you have to have Kavana Sangara, the time that he cooks it, you have to have a mind to eat it on them. Even Rabbi, who says that it's Mutam and Arterio, admits that it's forbidden to the Rabbi. So the Gemara asks that question. The Gemara himself asks that question. So the Gemara says, if you hold like Rabbi, that if you cook on Yom Tov, and the food could have been eaten up on Yom Tov, that today you have to rub on a sheep, and you won't plan to eat it on Yom Tov. So we have, and it's only forbidden to the Rabbi to cook on Yom Tov, planning to eat it after Yom Tov for them. You see, so the Rabbanim is listed in Makam Mitzvah. So we allow you to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. They can have some children. We allow you to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. But if you follow the opinion of Rav Chizkiya the Moreh, that if you cook on Yom Tov, you don't plan to eat it today, that's a biblical violation. That's an issue of the right thing. So the Moreh, how can you allow it on the day of Erev Hashiva? So the Moreh answers that according to Rav Chizkiya, it's Tochei Shabbos, not to the Yom Tov. If you're permitted in an Arterah to cook food on Yom Tov, not only for that day Yom Tov, you're permitted to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos that comes tomorrow. That's Muslim and Arterah. We say that Shabbos and Yom Tov, Muslim and Arterah, constitute one Hesher. It's like cooking today, I'm not to eat today. But tomorrow, then, Muslim and Arterah, there's no need for an Erev Hashiva. The only requirement for Erev Hashiva is clearly only the Rabbanan. Right? There's no possible in the Chumash about Erev Hashiva. The Erev Hashiva is only needed in the Rabbanan. And Arterah, you're permitted to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. You must have an Erev Hashiva. The rabbi says it's permissible to cook on Arterah because of polio. Theoretically, all the food could have been eaten up on Yom Tov. So it's Muslim and Arterah. And Arterah doesn't believe in polio. So he says that the reason why you're permitted to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and Arterah, even without the Erev Hashiva, is because it's only Shabbos, not only Yom Tov. We consider Shabbos a hemshech of Yom Tov, and you're cooking today for today. Like Rashi and the Ramban say, they're unsurfing that Rav Chizkiya's opinion that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos when the next week Shabbos is because he thinks that it's one hemshech of three shachas. So therefore, it should follow the Gemara's going to pass it and based on the next doubt that it's not three shachas. The Gemara says it's the Machlokes HaTanaim and Erezim and Beisa, and we have Shabbos next to Yom Tov. Do we say that it's one hemshech among Kedusha for 48 hours? And we say, no, it's a separate Kedusha for Shabbos and a separate Kedusha for Yom Tov. So since we pass in Halacha Nice to state Kedusha, so we have to reject our Chizkiya's opinion. As according to Rashi and Ramban, you have to reject. You have to reject our Chizkiya's opinion. Because our Chizkiya's view that Torah is Shabbos, not to the Yom Tov, you're not equipped today for tomorrow, because tomorrow is the Hemshech for the Kedusha by Yom Tov today, and you don't pass in Hazeh. Other Rishonim hold that that's not the Pshat. It's not based on the Kedusha Acha, so therefore they consider it a possibility of passing on Hazeh. Right, that's the Machlokes HaTanaim, and it is an error. Right, when Yom Tov falls out on Friday or on Sunday, if you have 2 days, one next to the other, so can you make a separate Erev Chumash to Yom Tov and a separate Erev Chumash to Shabbos? So they say no. It's considered like one long Hemshech of Kedushas Hayom for 48 hours, and either Erev Chumash is to the right or the Erev Chumash is to the left. You can't have an Erev Chumash for half of Shabbos in one direction and another Erev Chumash in the other direction for the other half of Shabbos. You have to have one Chum Shabbos for the whole Shabbos and for the whole Yom. So that's the original Machlokes HaTanaim and Erezim, where the Shabbos and the Yom Tov that are next to each other constitute one long Kedusha Hayom, that's called Kedusha Achas. They say, no, there is three Kedushas. There's one Kedusha on the one day and one Kedusha on the other day. And the Gemara says that we pass an halacha on a matter that is shtei kedushin. So the Ramban writes himself that since we pass an halacha on a shtei kedushin, he cannot possibly adopt the opinion of Rav Chisda. Chisda's idea that you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov or Shabbos, Bachar Shabbos not on the Yom Tov, that means it's called kedusha achat. But since we pass an shtei kedushin, you have to follow the view of Rav. That you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov and Shabbos is based on halacha. Since theoretically you get first come and eat it up, so that's mutter and I thought to cook on Yom Tov, even though you don't have a mind to eat it on Yom Tov. You have the Tavish and mind to eat it tomorrow. So it's only also the Rabbanim to rely on halacha. The Matan Mitzvah, in order to cook the Shabbos, they live to be eaten the Rabbanim. So again, we have these difficult rashis. Yeah. L'achshim is to prepare something for the Yom HaMashiach. The simple translation means the way it usually is done. To fix the broken knife or the broken fork in order to get the food is the Yom HaMashiach once removed, one step removed. So that's called L'achshim to cook the food itself in real Yom HaMashiach. To fix the knife is one step away from the food itself, so that's called L'achshim. So that was all the traditional interpretation of the distinction, but it's not exactly 100% correct. That's what we said. It makes a difference whether you're carrying the knife or you're fixing the knife. If you fix the knife and you're going to use it even at the end, that's called mashir. If you carry the knife, even when the love is not done to the food, that's called echa matishnam. That I don't consider one step removed from the food. Yeah. Then you can ask, right, when I put the food on top of the fire, and then it's going to cook, that's the act of Bishul. So if I put all the food into the pot when it's not on the fire, and then I take the pot and I put it on top of the fire, so that's one act of Bishul, that I'm doing the act of Bishul to much more than I'm going to use today. So that's called Marga Bishul. I have a heifer, I have a nefesh, and a half a pot. I only have a small family. I have a heifer, I have a nefesh, and a half a pot, and the rest of the pot I'm going to use. So tomorrow, if the yontif is over, so that's called Marga Bishul that it's moving. But if I take, let's say, the pot is already on the fire, and I take one piece of chicken, I put it in, so when I put the chicken in the pot on top of the fire, that's already the act of Bishul. It didn't finish yet, but that's the beginning of the act of Bishul. Then I take another piece of chicken and put it in, another piece I put it in. Every time I put in a piece of chicken or a piece of vegetable, whatever, on the fire, that's already an act of Bishul. So that's not Marga Bishul, that's Marga Bishul. He's doing extra malachas, so that's not permissible on Yom Tov. The only thing that's permissible is Marga Bishul. And even Marga Bishurim, it says in the commentary on the bottom of the Morgan Avram, the Masna Shekel, it says, let's say the pot is not on the fire yet. So if I have separate pieces of chicken, I put one piece, another piece, another piece, and all I need are 5 pieces, and then I put in 25 pieces. Put on the lid and I put the whole thing on top of the fire. The truth, at the time that I put it on top of the fire, there's only one single act of Bishul. And what I'm doing is only Marga Bishul, and I'm cooking the other 25 pieces out of the 5 pieces that I have had to have. And that's permissible, but before I got to do that, and I keep on putting one piece and another piece and another piece, that's an Ito HaKonis. That's an Ito HaKonis. When I put a raw chicken in that I won't plan to eat it today, it's not a malacha, it's not an Ito Deraita, but that's the Ito Derabonim of HaKonis. And I'm going to put the whole pot on top of the fire. That's one malacha, one bishul. So that's Marga Bishul. It has to, I don't violate any Avera malacha. But at the time that the pot is not on the fire, and I keep on piling in one piece and another piece and another piece, the additional pieces that I know bezadeh I'm not going to eat on Yom Tov, that's an Iser of Hachana. But the Rasta Shekel says it's only permissible to be Marga Bishul, and if it's one big chicken, I have one big chicken, all I need is 2 pieces. So instead of cutting off the 2 pieces, I can take the whole chicken and put it in. Unless they have in the freezer 2 pieces of meat. One is a gigantic piece of meat that'll be enough for today, tomorrow, next week. And the other one is enough for today. So I don't have to take off the small piece of meat and put it. I can take out the big piece of meat. So I'm going to have to take out a piece of meat anyway from the freezer. Now I'm going to have to start throwing on salt and pepper and flavor and whatever. So it doesn't make a difference whether I take the big piece or the small piece. Because at the time I put it into the pot, there's one act of hachana, and I'm doing it for today. Then I'm going to throw the flavoring on top. There's one act of throwing, whether it's a small piece or a big piece. I go like this. There's no additional hachana. But if I'm going to put separate pieces, each time I put another piece, it's a violation of hachana. It wouldn't be a violation of the malach, it would be a violation of hachana. But then we have this problematic Rashi. Rashi and then Mishnah and Rambam.
Rashi and then Mishnah say that the reason why you're not permitted to go hunting on Yom Tov, the reason why you're not permitted to prop up the fruits on Yom Tov, the reason why you're not allowed to present the juice on Yom Tov is whatever malacha you could have done before Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov. The Taisus on Daf Gimel says that it can't be. That this distinction between Efshalachis and Bogyam and Efshalachis and Bogyam should only apply in the area of Machshirei HaMetzish. Fixing the broken knife, fixing the broken fork. But as far as the area of HaMetzish proper, Taisus claims that's what most of the Rishonim hold, that we don't distinguish between Efshalachis and Bogyam as opposed to Efshalachis and Bogyam. But they don't understand the Rashi. So the Bnei Yeshua has a comment, a simple comment on the Rashi and Daf Gimel. He says Taisus is certainly right that if a Nefesh is Mutam and Atari, even if it's Echelazis and Bogram. The Rashi meant to say, Tosim and Rabbonim. On the level of their right, Taisus is right. But if a Nefesh is permitted on Yom Tov, even if he could have just as well done it with Bogram. But on the level of the Rabbonim, Rashi learns the mission that it's forbidden. You're not allowed to cook anything on Yom Tov, even though they're not his mother. If you go to cook it on Erev Yom Tov, it will taste just as good, you're not going to cook it on... The Taisus rejects Rashi. The Taisus doesn't like that. The Taisus is a hit to the Rabbanim. They don't see why they should have instituted a hit to the Rabbanim. But in Shulchan Aruch, there are more passages like Rashi. Right, so what do they do with the Mishnah? So that's what the Taisus has to give another style. The Taisus on Daf Gimel suggests the following reason. Maybe you're not allowed to go hunting on... you're not going to go fishing on Yom Tov, but you may catch a trace of fish. You may catch a trace of fish, and that you're not allowed to eat. And that you're not allowed to eat a trace of fish. What are you going to do with the trace of fish? Do the same, right? You're not allowed to do a malacha on Yom Tov on the head of the fish, right? Oh. So then the catch will be, so what if there's only one fish in the pot? Or let's say, why are you forbidden to rip off the fruits from the tree? What's going to be a trace of fruit? I see the apple, what is going to be a trace of? Why is this a good... The doctor says it doesn't like that shot. You're not allowed to go hunting because you may catch a non-kosher animal which you're not allowed to eat. Now turn out that you have no head of a they don't like that shot. So they say, no, the deal, you're not going to do this thing. And the first is very wide line. And that's in and out, we have the narrow lines and the wide lines and the very wide lines. In the very wide lines, and the first one says, V'yei Shomrin, and some interpreters said, Laka, it's for this reason that ain't done, you're not allowed to go hunting, you're not allowed to go fishing on Yom Tov. Shem HaYotzah Zogim Shemayim, you may catch our tuna fish, you may catch the trace of fish. Shem HaMtorah, that you're not allowed to eat, I would give it to us, right? You're not allowed to go hunting on behalf of Yom Tov. But it says it doesn't make any sense, and they give a whole fancy reason why. So therefore, Tashi says, the only way out is based on your Yishalmi. We have on the second very wide line, Al Kantu, Shabin, and Sahab, the Timur. That's why one of the Baba Yasin explained that the reason why you're forbidden to do all these things is based on the Yishalmi, where the Yishalmi comments, you have a Smith of Tashugin in Parshish Bo. The Torah says, Echon Nefesh is Mutter and Yom, Tav Nacha Shriyapa, Echon Nefesh Shul of Adol, Yiyot, and Okay? Right next to the Pasuk of God, making Shmur Amat. The Shmur Amat Amat. So when do you have to start making the Shmur Amat? So the Gemara is talking about that man, Muhammad Ali, has a machlokes with Amara. One opinion of the Gemara is that you have to do Shmur Mishad Kitzira. That's what we do. So when it harvests the grain, you have to harvest it, having in mind that we're going to make matzah shemitzvah with this grain. And you have to put it in sacks to make sure that it doesn't rain on the grain, kogman, that it's attached to the ground. It's highly unlikely that it's going to turn into hummus. Theoretically, the Gemara says it is possible. The Achmed the Mechuba, it is theoretically possible that the grain should become some seed in order to pass to the yacht, but because it's so unlikely, they have to worry about that. But after it's already cut off in the ground, it's more likely, it's more possible. But one opinion of the Gemara is that they have to have Shmura, Mishad, Ketira. From the time that you harvest it, you have to have in mind that you're going to use it for Mount Mitzvah. You have to put it in sacks that are waterproof and protected and make sure that it doesn't turn into hummus. And the other opinion, which is the more popular opinion in Mar, is that it's not necessary to have Shmur Mishad Kitzira from the time that you harvest it, but it's sufficient if you have Shmur Mishad Lisha, from the time that you mix in the water in the flour. So if you pour in water and you let it sit, then it's going to turn into hummus. When you cut it off in the ground, yeah, it's a vein, and it's in a puddle, and it sits there in a puddle, there's a chance that it may turn into hummus. But it's also unlikely that it's going to turn into hummus. Or they use geese, or the Russians used to have water mills and they used to grind the grain and turn it into flour, and the water would be splashing, the river would be flowing and causing the milk to go, and the water would be splashing, and sometimes the little water would splash onto the flour. So there's what to worry about. But the Ikar Hashash of Shmuel is the Shat Risho. When you pour in the water, the negative in the cabinet into the flour, so that's when you have to watch. And that's the more popular opinion in the Gemara, is that you only have to worry about Shmuel of the Shat Risho. So even though we are Machna today, and all the stories that sell the Shmura Matzah, the Shmura Meat, the Shishmur, Hishmur, and Shmura Mishad Kisbir, from the time of harvesting. But the Yishami says, not with many Mishayim Kriyot, and the Iker Adin, you don't really need Shmura Mishad Kisbir. It's only a form of Iker Adin. All the Matzahs that we have are Shmura Matzah, all the regular Matzahs are Shmura Matzah. So the Shmura Mishad Kisbir, from the time that they mix the flour in the water, they have the Mashgiach is there, and they have all the workers that are Jewish in this land. Everybody's watching to make sure that it doesn't turn into hummus, and you're going to use it for matzahs on Pesach. And Mikra Adin, all you need is Shmur Mishat Risha. The Pesach is called the Misham. But since these two Psukim are written one next to the other, so we dash in Smuchim. Just like the Shmat and the Tamat, so it's required that you should have Shmur Matzah. Mishat Risha, from the time that you pour the water into the flour, you should watch that it doesn't turn into hummus. So too, the Hester of Lechem Nefesh, that you committed to do Melachos on Yom Tov for the purpose of eating, only applies to Mishad Lisha V'Ela. From the time of kneading, so on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to harvest grain, you're not allowed to grind the grain and make flour out of it. But if you have the flour ready, you're permitted to do Lisha, you're permitted to do Afiyah, whatever Melachos are closer to the final product to the eating. Whatever Melachos are normally done well in advance of the eating, like the hunter, if a person wants to eat the wild deer, let's say once he gives me the supper, he doesn't go hunting 2 o'clock in the afternoon in order to eat the deer. He goes hunting a day or 2 in advance to make sure he's going to have such an animal. Or go fishing. If he assumes also when a person wants to have fish for supper, he doesn't go hunting right now. He goes hunting well in advance. Whatever Malachas are normally done well in advance of the meal, that does not have a heter of Rechem Nefesh. Whatever is normally done immediately before the meal, that has a heter of Rechem Nefesh. And this is a major machlokes in the Rishonim. The Ram disagrees with the Ramban at the beginning of the third paragraph plugin, where this limitation of Mishat, Isha V'Elech, is that on a level of Deraisa? Is that a drush of Gemurim of Deraisa? Is that only an Asmachim of the Rabban? The Rishonim has a drush, the Darsh and Smuchim. Yes, but the Gemara says in the first paragraph in the Ramban, do you have the right to dash and smoke them around? When you have two soup, when you have two dinim in the same part, that's called a hekesh. When you have two dinim in the same part, you get hekesh. When you have two dinim written in two soup in one next to the other, that's the machlokes of Yehuda and the Chachamim. Machlokes of Tanoim, where the smuchim has the same soup in next to each other, has the same status as two dinim in the same part, although dash and smoke. So we follow the view of the Rabbanim of Yehuda, that you do not dash and smoke them except for Chumash Dvarim. I'm just taking them off. The ratios, shmoyt, ba'ikra, ba'mitra, you don't dash in chum. You only dash in hekesh. If the two dinim are in the same context, then you assume there's a relationship. Only in chum is boring. And this is a shmok. And this is in fashion, boring shmok. So that's why Nikra Adin, the Ram holds Nikra Adin, there is no rush of smuchim in chum is shmok. Because we follow the view of the Rabban and the Rav Yudah. There's no dash in smuchim except from Mishnah Torah. This is not Mishnah Torah. It does not have Kish either. It does not have a lot of things there. It does not have a lot of things. I don't know. A lot of good kashas. Rabbi Shmuel lists up only 13 years at Talmud Rashikram in the bank of Rabbi Shmuel before Baal Shaman, and he's missing a lot of Russian. I don't know. He's missing a lot of things. I don't know why. There are extended writings that have many more than 13. But why did he leave out all these major Russian? So this is a major machlokes among the Rishonim, whether this limitation of Kodem Risho is a limitation on a level of the Raita, or only on a level of the Rabbanim. The Ram says in the beginning of the third day, he doesn't understand the rule that this should make sense on a level of the Raita. The whole Yerushalmi is only on a smachim of the Rabbanim, because that's how the Rambam says, and I tell you can even go hunting on Yom Tov, and you can pluck off the terrace, and you can grind the grain, harvest the grain, grind the grain. But with the Rabbanim, they said, spend all day long harvesting grain. Right? They said, there's not going to be any answer. So they said, it with the Rabbanim. And the Ramban and Tosfos and Shabbos insist, no, that it's a limitation on a level of the Rabbanim. Machlokes, whether this drosh is a drosh of Murim, or it's only in Atman. So now, not a matter of he'll spend all day long, but what about it? Right. There are different versions exactly. If you assume that it's only the Rabbanim, there are different versions as to what the nature of the Rabbanim is. If some say the nature of the Isa the Rabbanim was, if you allow him to get involved in this, Isa Malabas are usually done. You don't harvest what you want to make suffer. You don't only harvest the amount again, you don't only grind the amount again, you want to make a loaf of bread. You harvest a lot and you grind a lot. And we're afraid, the Rabbanim are afraid he's going to harvest a lot and grind a lot and he's going to spend the whole day shaman. Another thing is like, What if the fellow set up next, an Erev Yontif to catch the wild animal, or to catch the fish, and then he comes on Yontif and he sees that he caught, an Erev Yontif knows that nothing was caught. He comes on Yontif and he sees that the net, a fish, or a wild animal got caught on Yontif. So the Mishnah says, even if he didn't violate any of there at all, he's permitted, in Shabbos, in the Machlekes of Shaman the Tzuri, are you permitted to set up nets on Erev Shabbos? We talk like this too. You're permitted to set up nets on Erev Shabbos. So he didn't violate anything. Even on Erev Shabbos you can do that. But still, if it comes that on Yontif the fish got caught, or the wild animal got caught, you're not permitted to eat that fish or that wild animal. You're not allowed to shed it or eat it on Yontif. The Rashi and the Ramban, well, I don't know, what's wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do any of that. He's allowed to set the net. The one shot is that it's mukta. If the food was mukta, it had no hachon. That's a simple shot. And then the Ramban gives another shot. He says, since a malacha occurs on Yontif over here, the malacha says that you didn't do it. You didn't do it. You set the net on every other, you're allowed it. You're even permitted to set the net on that shot. But since the animal got caught on Yontif, so the state occurs, so the Ramban writes in the comments on the bottom of it is that that's part of the Zera of Mashti Shezobu and Eretz HaMoshim is a general Zera, any Malacha Shenatif Me'eleho, not only if a Jew did a Malacha or if a girl did a Malacha on behalf of a Jew, or if it didn't put in any from it, even if the Malacha happened by itself, the fruit fell off from the tree.
If that's the case, of the time of the Shabbat.
That's a good answer. That's the next step. We're going to get to that. It's mutter. That's the answer. I don't have enough time to explain it tonight, but the beginning is mutter. You're allowed to be introduced in the Shabbos. The question is why? We'll have to explain it next week. But the Ramban says that Teres HaNosh and Mashti Shazobu, Rav Yitzchok and Rav Yechid think that these are two separate Zeres. And there's a Machlekes of Rav Yitzchok and Rav Yechid where the Beit Mishnolda falls under Zera A, Zera B. But he says the other Amorim disagree with Rav Yitzchok and Rav Yechid, all that he does, but they're all wrong. We're not Zepik Zer Mashma Shizav and Zepik Zer Teres HaMashi. This is one universal Zer. And Malacha Shanash is Nei Leho. It's forbidden to be Nana from that Malacha. Even if the Malacha happened by itself, you're not allowed to be Nana from Malacha. Even if the animal got caught by itself, on Yom Tov, it's forbidden for you to eat that animal.
Here you're actually cutting the flesh, you're cutting the lemon.
So the Ramban claims that that's included in this universal day. No, it wasn't a law of Meshila Tushanga or of Seda, but you didn't do it, it happened by itself. No person, no human being did the Malacha. But the Malacha occurred by itself. The animal committed suicide. The animal was drunk.
I caused this indirectly. for human beings.
We'll have to discuss it at once about setting nets. Why setting nets doesn't count as human intervention, and why setting a Shabbos clock does count. We'll have to discuss it. Put money in the bank. The interest means that they promise to pay me extra money more than I gave them because they're holding the money, they're doing something with the money. That's not a malacha. Malacha didn't happen. It's a different problem. If you leave your money in the bank, you get interest in the problem. That's shabbos. That's another problem. Moshe Feinstein has a shul about that. What are you doing? You get interest in the bank. Okay, that's the problem. Yeah, the whole case is. That's a difficult thing. Maybe we'll talk about it sometime. Says Mutter, the kid says Mutter. He says, as long as I have Shabbos next to Yom Tov, then it's okay. If you only have one day Shabbos, one day Yom Tov, not one next to the other, he says it's okay. That's the Bahab law. Maybe we'll talk about it. Before I continue, I'll speak a little on Kumish. Before I continue, I want to know, 2 weeks from tonight, we have a Shia scheduled every Monday night. 2 weeks from tonight, we have a regular Shia schedule. I happen to have a wedding that night. So if it's possible to postpone the shiur till Tuesday night, so Tuesday night, so 2 weeks from tonight is the last Monday in November. And that Tuesday night is the first night of December, that's December 1st. There are different functions going on. So if it's possible for people to attend the shiur here on Tuesday night rather than Monday night, I would appreciate it. Yes? On Tuesday night? In the basement? We'll have to find out that next. Okay. Okay, good. In the beginning of Parshas told us, we read about Rivka, who became pregnant, and she didn't realize that she had twins. She thought that she was pregnant with one baby. And the Pasuk says, "I saw her sister Habani be tearful," and she couldn't understand what in the world was going on. Rashi quotes the interpretation of the Medrash, "I saw her to Milosh and Rizko," that the babies were running. Where were they running? When she was passed by the Tiskei Torah, Shoshen the Aver, she was passed by the Yeshiva where they were learning Torah, Yankit loved him, Afarhez loved him. Yankit would be jumping out. In other words, the baby had a tendency towards learning. Going to be a Truma baby, even before it's born, has a religious inclination. And she was passed by a church, and she would be Averis of Pitzka, where it's a Lilin, eighth of the practice class. So she was very annoyed about this. This child is a mixed up child. He wants to run to Averis own, he wants to run to Lanta Rosa, that's terrible. So she went there, she did not be watching the beast, and he said, well, the parents is a two different baby. But then if I ever run out of cash, she wasn't aggravated anymore. One child is going to be an Averis of Averis own, one child is going to be a rabbi, that shall suffer alone, but that's not so dear. But to have a son who's a rabbi, who has to do with Avodah Zarah, that's good. That's what we're doing. To have a son of a reformed rabbi, to have a son who's in high school Avodah Zarah, who learns Torah, that she wants to have an abortion. She wanted to abort the child. That's what it says in Pesach. But then when the Navi told her there's two different babies, one is going to be an Avodah Zarah, then she was appeased. So the commentaries comment on the Lashon HaPasuk, why does it say, in case she thought that this is one child who has leanings towards Avodah Zarah and leanings towards learning Torah, and she didn't want to have this baby at all, Lom Nizah Anochi, I don't want to have this pregnancy. Why did she say Lom Nizah Anochi? Why the expression Lom Nizah Anochi? So a double of elevation she has in his Sefer HaKumenish, and others before him have the same comment based on the passage in the Gemara in the beginning of Bracha. The Lord tells us that Yehoshamelech didn't want to have any children because he saw the Ruach HaKodesh that his children were not be religious. He didn't want to give birth to children who weren't religious. So Yeshaya HaMelech came to tell him, part of the story is related in Ravi, he's going to die because he violated the mystical period of Israel. But he parenthesis, he sent his physician and says, but I know the Ruach HaKodesh, the children will be wicked, they'll violate mystical period. What do you think is bringing children into the world who won't be religious? Yeshaya Navi says that none of your business what's going to happen. My mitzvah is whatever you are obligated to do, you have to go fulfill it. Baruch Hashem told you to have children, It's your obligation to go marry, to go get married and have children. It's none of your business what's going to be later. So the commentary explained that the mitzvah really only applies to men. There's a dispute in addition to problems where the women are also obligated in their religion. So we talk to women don't have a mitzvah religion. So she signed his mama's own. I want to have an abortion. I don't want to have this job. Because I see, the Rahab tell you that this kid, this is a nutty to raise the child. He has inclinations towards having his own inclinations towards learning. At the same time, she thought it was one child, so she didn't want to have the child, she wanted to have an abortion. So her time was, Lama's on earth, I am a woman. Women are exempt from the midst of Tiririri, so I do have the right to make a chesed. The only time you don't have the right to make a chesed in observing the midst of Tiririri is, if the Rabbi Shalom tells you, you are mechuyif to do this, so don't ask any kashrut. You have to go do it like Avraham Avinu did by the Akedah. It absolutely didn't make any sense at all to him to go kill his one and only child. He'd be Yitzchak Yisrael of Ozer. This child is supposed to carry over the tradition of Kedushas Yisrael. And then he's going to go shech to some Yitzchak who's going to be Yitzchak Kedushas Yisrael. So he didn't ask any kashrut. He went ahead and was about to do the Akedah. Then the Baruch Hu told him to stop at the last minute. But she says over here, I'm not obligated to do this. You want me to volunteer to do a mitzvah. So whenever you're not obligated to do it, then you have the right to make calculations with his thing.
I'll come.